Another work week getting set for what's going to be a fairly nice weekend here in the province, the south part of the province. Warm, 7 or 8 degrees in the sunshine tomorrow. So pretty nice if you're down in that part of the province around the Saskatoon area. We're probably going to be more like 3 or 4 degrees, but still not too bad at all for a fairly nice weekend. Next weekend, it cools off. We probably see some moisture in the way of snow. So let's enjoy this weekend as much as we can. And we've got lots going on this morning. I appreciate having you here. Open lines at 9 o'clock. We just heard about a significant tax increase being forecasted in Regina. Does this make you feel better? Saskatoon was hearing numbers of 8.23%. Well, Regina's double that. It's a big projected tax increase. Of course, it's just projected, but we'll talk a little bit about that. We got lots we can chat about during open phones. Bugs and Hugs coming up at 10. Belton stops by with his weekly check-in. It's eating time, a great recipe for us there. And of course, we're still talking about the budget to nation-building projects and how that will unfold and the impact it'll have on certain sectors like oil and gas. In fact, why don't we start the conversation there with today's big talker?
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome.
Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show. The Big Talker.
Well, as we know, the budget passed this week. No federal election was triggered, and now the dust settles and we figure out what the implications of the budget, of these nation-building projects are. Yesterday, as part of an ongoing kind of cross-Canada tour, the Honorable François-Philippe Champagne was in Saskatchewan. He's Canada's Minister of Finance. He met with numerous leaders. He joined SUMA for a discussion on the federal budget. He had lunch with the Premier. We were working. Libby was working for literally 2 weeks to try and get the federal finance minister on the show, and it looked like it wasn't going to happen. He had a busy schedule. It was literally the last minute yesterday afternoon. It was after my show. I'm in the office. We get a call. Can you talk right now with the finance minister? He's on the road. He's traveling, but he can have a really quick chat with you if you would like. So we connected with him better late than ever yesterday, and I want to play that conversation. Great to have the finance minister on the program.
No, let me apologize for not being in person. I tried, but we were just finishing with the premier having lunch, and then I promised to see the troops at 15 Wing and Moose Jaw, and then onward to Saskatoon to sleep in Winnipeg. So I just couldn't, you know, despite our best effort, you know, I still have to drive in between these cities. So I said we're not, but I know you're the best show in town, so I'm quite happy to be on, but I apologize for not being in person.
No problem. We're glad to be able to connect with you, Mr. Minister. Thanks so much for making the time. Well, maybe we'll start with what brings you to Saskatchewan.
Well, listen, I've wanted to certainly engage with the people of Saskatchewan, with the Premier, the Mayor, and a number of ministers, you know, following Budget 2025. Which is really about investment. And I think it speaks to Saskatchewan, it speaks to people in Regina, it speaks to the prairies, because it's all about, you know, making sure we can send our goods to market with our trade corridors, making sure we can support small businesses, making sure we support Canadians at a time where, you know, people are feeling the pressure in the field, on the shop floor, and at the kitchen table. You know, the affordability is key, so people have said, you know, help us now, which we did with the tax cut, but at the same time, build the country for the future. So the reception was good. We were with the municipalities, Saskatchewan Union of Municipalities this morning, and then onward to the mayor and the premier. And I think we have good things coming for Saskatchewan, and I look forward to spend more time here.
Canada's Minister of Finance joining us today, the Honorable François-Philippe Champagne. So I'm curious to know, I mean, our Premier has had what sounds like and feels like a good working relationship since Prime Minister Carney has stepped in. But that said, as you know, Minister, energy production is a big one. The discussion around a pipeline is something that you are having with Alberta here in Saskatchewan. That's also a major topic of discussion. Thoughts on energy in particular when it comes to oil and gas? There is this perception, as I'm sure you've heard, that there's a bit of a look down the nose from Ottawa on the oil and gas industry, even though I would suggest it's still a pretty important one and will be for years to come.
Oh, I mean, it is key to our nation economy, but also it's part of what we've been doing best in Canada. I have, I know a lot of the folks who are in the natural resources industry, mining industry. In fact, with the premier, we were talking about the role that Saskatchewan, the key role that Saskatchewan could play, for example, on critical minerals, which are going to be essential for the economy of the 21st century. We talked about innovation. We talked about natural resources. And, you know, the prime minister has been pretty clear. Canada is an energy superpower in clean and renewable energy. We talk about nuclear, with Cameco and the fact that we have here in Saskatchewan the talent, the expertise, the know-how to really bring, the nuclear energy and industry across the world. You know, we are one of the few nations who can train the people, build a plant, provide the equipment, and then the fuel, obviously, which would come from uranium mine in Saskatchewan. So I see, a lot of opportunities for growth here in the province. And, you know, when you think that today, going back to your point, I think more and more Canadians understand the nexus between economic security, energy security, food security, and national security. And I think Saskatchewan, in that sense, has a lot to offer to the rest of the country, but also to our partner and allies around the world.
I appreciate the fact. I think the critical minerals has been a big part of the discussion that you've had. In fact, I remember you saying just last week, that's the name of the game, that critical minerals will get us there. But if I can just take you back to oil and gas for a second, because there are, as you've heard, I think Premier Danielle Smith said, the 9 bad laws. I'm sure you would choose different wording, but is there an ability or a willingness on the federal government to look at things like the tanker ban, which ultimately are not just about getting our product to market, but really about how investment flows into our provinces?
Well, crowding in investment has been basically what you've seen in the budget, making sure that we, for example, now new investments in the country would benefit from the lowest tax rate you find in the G7 countries, and even the IMF with Canada second to the U.S. in terms of GDP growth. So to go back to your question about natural resources, We should all look, whether it's the federal government, provincial, municipalities, to say, how can we be more efficient, when it comes to permitting, when it comes to provide certainty and predictability. When I speak to proponents, and I had a chance to speak to a number of them, what they really want to see is more predictability so that they can plan accordingly. And I think, in the world that is, the speed, scope, and scale of change is quite unprecedented. Some would go back to 1945. Canada stands out when it comes to stability, predictability, the rule of law, and also a business climate, which, to your point, I think, the word in Ottawa is certainly welcoming investment in the energy sector for sure. And I think we're a nation who can do that both sustainably and responsibly. For me, that's why I see that this province, the Prairies and Western, I was with Premier Smith just last week. So you'd be pleased to see how much is getting done behind the scenes to make sure that we put Western Canada at the forefront of the economic growth in our country.
Okay, well, we'll maybe leave that there for now and shift gears just in the last few minutes that we chat, Minister, and we are chatting today with Canada's federal finance minister, the Honourable François-Philippe Champagne. Can we talk a bit about affordability? Obviously, a lot of Canadians keep an eye to the budget. Maybe we'll start with the deficit. That's a big number. And as much as, we heard you talk about this is a generational investment, this is, being bold and ambitious and will pay dividends in the future. But there is always this worry about affordability now and that growing debt. What do you say to the average Canadian that you bump into that says, I'm really worried about the debt for generations?
Well, I would say 75% of that is to protect our sovereignty and affordability, which is where you started. On the sovereignty side, I think folks who listen to us would understand we need a response to the tariff. We need to invest in our military to protect our sovereignty. And basically, the other part of that was really to give a break to families. People are telling me, Minister, we get it. We need to have projects for the future, build the infrastructure, invest in productivity, invest in our military. But what about the end of the week and the end of the month, which was really the tax cut, the measure we did to help first-time home buyer. And I would say housing. I think, Evan, you would say that one of the key affordability measure for me goes back to affordable homes, because if you dedicate the right portion of your income to house yourself, and it's not disproportionate, that's already a big boost to what you have in terms of family income to support the family and anything, everything else you need. So I would say that I've kept an eye very much on affordability, which you're right to say that is what people probably think first and foremost. At the same time that they said, we also need to leave this country with better infrastructure, with you know, the type of investments that are going to make the future generation you know, benefit from prosperity like we had the chance to do in our generation. So there's a need to, you know, remove these bottlenecks so we can make sure this canola can go to new markets. We need to make sure that we give a break to small and medium-sized businesses so they can invest in equipment and plant and machinery. We need to make sure that we build a railway that is going to help to ship to new ports and infrastructure and build the North at the same time, you know, using our defense spending in a very smart way to build communities and runways and ports and airports in the North.
Is there, you know, I obviously you've got a financial mind. You think about this no different than any of us do in terms of what we owe in debt right now and what the implications could be going forward. Is there a time when you look at that number, that debt and the projected deficit in this year's budget, and worry about it? Like, just as a Canadian, does that big number scare you?
Listen, I come from rural Canada. I come from Shawinigan. So you're talking to someone who's really grounded. I mean, let me say four things. So the first thing is that we need to realize as Canadians, we're facing headwinds. You know, like I said, the speed, scope, and scale of change, whether it's geopolitics, whether it's tariffs, whether it's supply chain, whether it's technology, all that is coming very quickly to us in the way that we've not seen in a long time. The good news is that if you listen to, for example, the International Monetary Fund, which looks at the balance sheet of all the country, recently they said there's really only two countries in the world that really stand out, that have the wherewithal to sustain investment, which is Germany and Canada. And once you've said that, you need to say, okay, so if we have fiscal capacity, you need to make sure you invest in things that are going to grow the economy. So housing, infrastructure, productivity. But lastly, I would say, and most importantly, Canadians have been tightening their belt for quite some time. And they expect to do that. Ottawa does exactly the same. And there goes the savings of $60 billion. So I think this has shown Canadians how serious we are, how focused we are, and how responsible we are with their tax dollar. On one end, yes, we need to invest, but people expect us to find the savings to make the federal government more efficient and certainly spend less so we can invest more.
Okay, I know we're up against the clock. Minister, I appreciate you giving us some time today. Thanks so much for checking in.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be with you.
That is the Honorable François-Philippe Champagne. It was a call we did. It was a little bit hastily pulled together. We had tried for quite a while to get him on the program. We're given lots of no's, wasn't going to work with the schedule. And literally, last minute, yesterday afternoon, Libby Gray, executive producer of this show, gets a hold of me and she says, Evan, apparently they could call the newsroom in like 1 minute. So I literally ran down to the studio so that we could record that quick interview. But, you know, I have to say, I mean, Monday on the show, we have got someone from the author of the 2025 International Tax Competitiveness Index. The news is not good. Canada's ranking low on that. We'll talk more about that on Monday. But it's not as rosy as, of course, the government is painting it out to be. I know they've talked about steps and nation-building projects, and we're seeing a collaborative approach, including from our premier, Saskatchewan's Premier Scott Moe, talked about working with the federal government to build these things. But it feels like it's a long way off, and in the meantime, we're dealing with these cost-of-living challenges that are not going away. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.